Marilyn Kring Productions in association with Emergent Life Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 28, delivered on December 5.
Today, review for the final exam, Part 2. Starting with what I had said yesterday, just to summarize, your exam will have 75 questions. You will have 120 minutes to complete it. With 75 questions, that means each one is worth 1 1/3 points. You will be allowed 2 note cards, 4x6, front and back, and you will be allowed to have your formula sheet, that financial ratios sheet from early. You cannot have any writing on that sheet, however. As far as other details go, you'll need your calculator. If you're going to use a virtual TI, you bring it out and do not have anything else on the screen. My teaching assistant will be going around to make sure nothing else is there except for that TI showing up there. You'll need that, obviously, for some of the questions, unless you really want to do some work on the exam. I'm going to go through a detailed review, tell you what I think you should know, give you a few little examples along the way, especially of the formula type problems and the application using the TI-83. Excuse me. And then from there, I'm going to open it up for you to ask me questions. And be very specific. If you ask me, is this going to be on the exam? And it's not, I'll say, no, I don't recall that being on the exam. Now, obviously, there will be some things that I'll miss in this review, and it would be up to you to help me remember some things. But just to start with, well, I could put this exam on the overhead for you to look at for a little while. Yeah, I know, right? Just to start off in a general fashion, I'm going to give you a specific count here of math questions. There's 1, 2. This is calculation. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It looks like approximately 10 math type questions. Most of them, of course, are calculator based, so the actual math that you do is somewhat minimal. Let's go through the grinder here. Going from the beginning of the course forward, make sure you know the difference between accounting and finance. What do they recognize that we don't care about, and what do we recognize that they don't include in financial analysis or in financial reporting? So be sure that you know about costs, what they think costs are, what we think they are, what we call profit versus what they call profit. Moving on in the early parts of the course, you should know what liquidity is. Know exactly the definition. Because as I told you, there will be several places on this exam where I will put down a definition that has one word or a couple of words that aren't correct, and you need to identify if this is actually the definition or if this is something else that is not the correct way to say it. Know the types of business organizations, the sole proprietorship, partnership, corporation. What makes them different from each other, and especially what distinguishes a corporation from other business entities? There's one thing primarily. As far as money goes, know what money is. Make sure you know what money is and what kinds of money there are and how that relates to liquidity and how that also really relates to the expected return. In that same regard, make sure you know the difference between money and capital. Sometimes we just say money and we mean capital, but when it gets down to it, you'll hear in the podcast, if it's capital, that's capital. And if I say money, I usually, unless I'm slipping, I mean something that is not capital. You should know the different types of risk there are and how we measure risk. There are several different ways we talk about risk in different dimensions. For example, I would say volatility. That's a description of risk, but it's a fairly loose it's a fairly loose description that doesn't serve us if we're trying to get down to real analysis of a security or of a portfolio. So make sure you know how we measure risk, what the different types of risk are, especially know the different kinds of risk that can show up. Early in the semester, I showed you some of the reporting forms for the SEC, for the Securities and Exchange Commission. What forms go with what activities? And I mentioned some different ones, 8Ks, 10Ks, 10Qs, S1s, SB1s, SB2s, different types. I even mentioned Reg D 504s, the exemptions to registrations. The Form 10 is an important one for you to remember. So keep that in mind as you go through this, your studies. Know the different forms, what each one tells you, what you can extract from each one. There's one. There are some that have really important information that is large and long term, like the MD&A. And then there are reporting forms that tell you something that is just a happenstance event that is non-recurring. Make sure you know that. Know the difference between an agent, a broker, and a dealer. Now, I use agent there, and there's a completely different use of the word agent, and that is an agency. Now, make sure that you know about agency. Cost of agency, who's principal, who's agent. And if I were to give you an example, I would expect you to be able to give me who is who. Know the difference between a normal agent and an agent with fiduciary duties and how that relates to the principal and monitoring and enforcing. I talked about markets early on, stock market, capital market, bond market, money market, bond market. Make sure you know that when you say market, and there's commodity markets as well, make sure you know what each one means and where that fits into the overall global financial environment. I've used a lot of terminology in this class. By my count, it was about 87 different terms. Just go through. Make yourself flashcards. Just write each term down. The closer you get to a magical like 80 mark, the better off you are for studying terminology. I threw so many different things at you over that. And also, some of that terminology has to do with ratio analysis. If I say PE ratio, if I say the net margin,
if I were to say, well, the gross margin, inventory turnover, even beyond knowing the formula, know what they tell us. What are they indicating? ROA, ROE. What do those talk about? What are we looking for when we look at those numbers? Current ratio, those kinds of things. And another one that came a little later, which is in that same sort of universe, it was working capital and net working capital. Sometimes you will, later on in the course, I began to sneak in a term, net operating working capital. What is that telling us? Know the different securities laws. I brought up a lot. I brought them up several times. I didn't bring them up a lot. Securities Act of 1933, the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, the Glass-Steagall Act. I brought up SOX and Frank Dodd. What was the company that drove the legislature to wake itself up and pass Sarbanes-Oxley, the SOX? Why did Frank Dodd get passed? Just make sure you have a summary understanding of what these different laws were about, why they were there, and what they address. I brought up other terms, like, for example, in bond terminology, I talked about callable bonds, convertible bonds, seniors bonds, all that, subordinated, ETFs. And I also talked about some other things, too, like euro dollars. What's a euro dollar? Pulling it back down, make sure you know about the operations of the Federal Reserve. What do they do, and what do they not do? Be careful on this, because there's one question where I say the Fed does something, and you've got to think about, well, does it actually do that or not? As a matter of fact, there are a couple places the Fed does this. Well, does it actually do that or not? So focus on knowing just the basic outline of the operations. What are their three tools of monetary policy? What does the Fed do besides conduct monetary policy? In terms of monetary policy, I gave you three different tools they have. What's the least used? What's the most used? Early on in the course, I was talking about interest rates. Know how an interest rate is created. There's a risk-free component, and then there's a default maturity and liquidity premium. Those three last ones together are the risk premium. Know what is inside of the risk-free rate. Know what the balance is for a given kind of loan among the risk premia. Does this certain type of loan have all three in it? Does it have a couple? Does it have one? Does it have none of them? God, this is a long exam. Oh, sorry. Offerings of stock. I talked about there are some where the stock is freely tradable. There are others where, investors can get stock, but they can't do anything with it unless something else happens. And if they can freely trade it, how does that happen? There are different kinds of underwriting that can happen. I gave you three different types of underwriting. And I even gave you a couple of names for one of those types. Well, actually for two of them. There's the Western style, and then there's the best efforts. And then the one that we usually think about when we think about an IPO, that's done by a firm underwriting with an underwriting syndicate of investment banks. That's sometimes called an Eastern underwriting because it's done by the big boys on the East Coast, the Wall Street boys. Or it used to be. They do it in Chicago and other places too. Make sure you know some of the terminology about bonds, the broad terminology, an investment grade versus a high yield. What's a junk bond? Where does that fit in? What kind of ratings would you see on a good bond versus a risky bond? I don't go into a lot of detail. Well, what's the difference between a double A and a single A? Well, I don't go into that detail, but make sure you know the difference between A, B, C, and D types of bonds and notes. And in that same regard, early on I talked about the difference between the borrower and the lender and what we use for that terminology. In a corporate environment, the borrower is the issuer of the debt, the seller of the debt, and the lender is the purchaser, the buyer, the investor in the debt. Just make sure you know that, because there will be one on there where I'll describe a loan. And you'll have to figure out which one of the five statements is the correct technical description of what happened. As far as bonds go, make sure you know the difference between the coupon and the yield, and what I mean by par, face value, those broad terms. Make sure you know what happens, if all other things are equal, what happens to the price of a bond as the yield and coupon spread increases. Again, make sure you know what happens to the price of a bond as the yield and coupon spread increases. In other words, there would be a difference between two otherwise identical bonds. Let's say they both have 13 years left to maturity. They each have a coupon of 5%, but the yield on one bond is 5.2%. The yield on the other bond is 5.9%. What would that do to the prices of those bonds? How would that make them different from each other? In that same bond price dynamics, what happens to the price of a bond as it gets closer to its maturity? Another word that you might want to make sure you know is term, T-E-R-M. What do I mean by the term of a bond? As I said, there'll be a matching, a short matching section. It's pretty easy. But unfortunately, if you get one wrong, then you get probably are going to get two wrong. So just make sure that you get every one of them right. I spent some time during about halfway through the course, maybe a little other than halfway, on the yield curve. In fact, I even asked about it on a quiz. Make sure you know what is a healthy yield curve and what is an unhealthy. Now, there are different kinds of unhealthy. There's a yield curve that can flag that there's a recession coming. There's a yield curve that can flag that there's inflation coming. And so make sure you know what that means in terms of, if I'm looking at the data, what would a healthy yield curve's yields be showing as the term of the bond increases? What would they be showing if there was an inversion in the yield curve? What would those bond yields look like as you look farther from a 1 month out to a 30-year instrument? Now, going back through, I'm going to make one more pass on the qualitative side, and then I'll do a little bit of talking about the quantitative side. So, on the qualitative side, the capital asset pricing model, what does it do? What is the efficient frontier of investments? What is the capital market line, and what is the securities market line? Now, it's a little bit backwards. I'll just tell you right now, the capital market line is associated with the frontier of efficient investments. The securities market line is associated with the capital asset pricing model. It's kind of like they're twisted. Yes. Okay, the capital market line is associated with the frontier of efficient investments. It's that tangent line thing that anchors on the risk-free rate and then swings up and just taps the frontier. Now, the securities market line is the one that is actually the plot of the capital asset pricing model equation. You're plotting betas against expected returns. And in that same regard, make sure you know what I mean by the market premium. If I say the market premium is, you know what part of CAPM I'm talking about. Swinging back on, picking up where a few other things along the way. I talked about free cash flow. Several times I hit that. What do I mean by NOPAT? How is NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes, different from what accountants call net income? And how do I get from NOPAT down to free cash flow? There are things that I add and things that I subtract to get down there. And one of those is net operating working capital. Now, there will be a quantitative equation on the exam that will do that, that will test, can you calculate a change in net operating working capital, NOWC. It'll be a real company, too. And if I'm almost tempted to give you five companies, and one of those is the one that it would be off their 10K. Would you like that much? You'd have to actually do the calculation for all five of the companies. Okay, Amazon, Netflix, Tesla, Target, and Kellogg. Amazon, Netflix, Tesla, Target, and Kellogg. Huh? That was four. That was five.
That was five.
Yeah. Amazon, Netflix, Tesla. I'm giving you it would be one of those five where you would have to calculate the change in net operating working capital from this year, from the previous year to this year. And all it is just your current assets minus your current liabilities in the current year minus your current assets minus your current liabilities in the previous year. That's all you have to do. Just get the net working capital for this year and the net working capital for last year and subtract the two.
But what if you
Huh?
This is all one. There's just one question. It's one of those five companies. It's just one of those five companies. So if you wanted to calculate them all and then put it on your note card, that takes up room, obviously. Yes.
You said so the net working capital for this year minus what?
Net working capital for last year. In other words, current assets minus current liabilities is your net working capital. So all you're going to do is find the net working capital for the most two recent years from the 10K, and then take the current one minus the previous one, and that will give you your answer. Now that's a lot of work, but if you want to do it, then you would and put down those five, then you'd have one of the questions finished. I'm not sure whether that's doing you a favor or not doing that. Because that's just, it would. And if you did it really quickly, if you downloaded the Excel sheets for those five companies and you could work it real fast on Excel, you'd be good. I know you do. I mean, what else is there to do? Listen to my podcast, play games. I shouldn't say this. There were like 32 games played on my website over this semester. So I thank you for doing this. Someone even went in and played Where is Osama? Huh? I have a block that keeps people from buying it because it's illegal to sell to ISU people. So you can't bribe me by buying $1,000 worth of my very attractive art. Now wait until you get rich and you can afford it. And all of you are because you took my course. I'll give you one where you've got to capitalize the securities market line. And I'm going to say, okay, either the risk-free rate changes or the expected return of the market portfolio changes. Tell me what that does to the expected returns to stocks. It's that one where, so as a quick, dirty example of this, okay. This is the beta against the expected return to the portfolio and the stocks and whatever, or just stocks. I'll just put stocks there. Now here's the beta of one, which is the pivot, because whatever that expected return is, that is the expected return to the market portfolio. And then you'll have a lower risk-free rate. And then those two hook together to create a capital market line. Now I'll say, okay, so in other words, a stock with a beta of 0.5 would have this expected return. A stock with a beta of 1.6 would have this return right here. But what would happen to those expected returns if, let's say, the risk-free rate were to fall or rise? Let's say it rose, but the expected return to the market portfolio stayed the same. Well, that would mean that the securities market line would swing. So in other words, low beta stocks, which had these returns, would get higher returns, but high beta stocks, which got those returns, would now get lower returns. It would be some question like that. One of those two pivots, either the risk-free rate or the expected return to the market portfolio, swings, changes. And what does that do to the expected returns to securities of different betas? I consider that, by the way, a level 3 question. It's not that it's really mathematically, technically complicated. It's just something that has always been a difficult question for students to answer. Okay. make sure you know, interest rates have volatility. How does that volatility affect prices of stocks and bonds? If interest rates become more volatile, what does that do to prices of bonds? If interest rates become, what do interest rates have to do with investments companies make? Do higher returns make companies want to invest more? Or does it make them want to invest less? Or does it not change their investment plans? Make sure you know the difference between, how is net present value related to internal rate of return? How is net present value related to internal rate of return? How is NPV used? Make sure you know how hurdle rates are used with internal rates of return, or how internal rates of return are used with hurdle rates, I should say. So if a hurdle rate, a company has a hurdle rate policy of 12%, and it gets a project with an internal rate of return of 10%, what does that mean the company does? That kind of thing. I'll ask you one of those. I will ask you one of those. Guaranteed I will. Know the difference between systematic and unsystematic risk. And make sure you know that systematic risk is non-diversifiable. Unsystematic risk is diversifiable. Again, it's kind of like there's a twist between the two terms. I brought up a couple of different terms in investments, ETFs, and mutual funds. Make sure you know those, what those are. And other stock market terms, and I said this the last time, just make sure you know what the difference is between a bull market and a bear market. What do we mean by a market correction? What's a bargain hunter? What is, you're going to see things on a screen like market cap. What does the market cap tell you? Is that the same as the book value of equity? Because they're both measuring the value of equity. Market cap is measuring the same thing that on the balance sheet the accountants are calling book value of equity. Are they the same number? Should they always be the same? Or should they most of the time be the same, or almost never should they be the same? I also talked about yields, dividend yields, and all that kind of stuff. You'll see that on those. Your on-balance volume for the day. Make sure you know the difference between the bid and the ask. That big number that they say up, show there at the top, ain't going to be what you actually pay for a share of stock. Now, this is what really irritates me. Yep, it cleared out all of the bookmarks. Thank you for doing that before the semester is over. Really appreciate it, tech people. Gah! Okay. Pinches my suspenders. Okay, where was I? I keep going back to the same companies. Let me do something completely different.
geez, I'm drawing a blank. There's a million companies. Oh, well, let me do Aon. It's a nice, big, overwhelmingly large company. Okay. That big number up there at the top is not going to be what you pay for that stock. There's going to be a bid and an ask. And that's moving from minute to minute, possibly second to second, I don't know, depending upon the company. And that's where you look for what you're going to buy a stock for, what you're going to sell it for. The dividend yield, this is the amount of the dividend. The first number is how much in dollars. You're going to get, if you own a share of this stock, you will get $1.76. And if you take that $1.76 by the current price, you get the dividend yield. Then you would add in the, well, that's a pretty pathetic, look at that. So the one-year yield, and here I'm up, no, cancel. Where did I thought I had my calculator up there. No, I didn't. Okay. So now on this one, my capital gain, if I had a one-year hold, if this company's stock makes it to 203.35, from buying it one year previously, that is pathetic. Look at that. Is that right? Oh, let me use another company. They're saying this company's not going to do anything. Bank of America, BAC. What are they saying? All these are going to have. Well, okay, I'll just do this one. Just okay, the capital gain yield on Bank of America, BAC, would be 33.78 divided by 33.08, man, minus 1. So the capital gain yield on a one-year hold would be 2.11%. And then you add in the dividend yield, which is 2.19%. So your total yield for a one-year hold on Bank of America is projected to be about 5.11%. I mean, that's not as spectacular. And especially, okay, why would you say, if this is right, this investment sucks? 2.19. That's even worse. Okay, let me go back. 2.12. I can't see where the darn. Yeah, you're right. Wow. At least when I go blind, I won't have to see myself in the mirror in the morning. Wow. Why would you say this is a really not a good idea investment? Come on, look at the screen. Look at this screen right here. Why would you say this is actually a pretty, not a very good idea investment? Is there anything there in those numbers that tells you that total gain isn't worth the aggravation? Anyone see anything there? Yeah, that worries me. That's exactly, the beta is ridiculously high. That's a 1.62 beta. This is a really risky stock. And yet, it's spitting out only 4.31%. Seriously? That's not enough. Now, granted, the P.E. ratio is quite low. So P.E. ratio is saying this is actually a fairly safe stock.
But that beta is the bad thing. Yeah. I said 2.1. It was supposed to be 2.19. That's why I had to do it over, because someone had to go and yap about it. Yeah. I can't. I mean, honestly, I can't see crap right now. My eyes are so bad right now. There. That. Yeah, that's a 2.19, as you can see. Whoa. Okay. Anyway. Now, that is a one-year hold for that stock. If I were to have, I give you a problem, and I'm not saying I will, but I will. Where did I put my, oh, there it is. If I were to give you one, you can't use that simple end over begin minus one. You would have to go, so for example, let's say, oh, let me do something that's not a terribly bad idea. Let me do, NVIDIA is a nice risky stock. Okay, NVIDIA is right now selling at 208.38. So on November, we're in December now. Let's say December 5, 2019, you buy one round lot of NVDA at 208.47, on March 10, 2023, you sell the lot for 238.56. Annualized return. As remember, it's going to be the end over the beginning to the one over the number of years minus one. This one doesn't pay a dividend. Oh, it does. Well, let's ignore the dividend. I don't do that in the question. So in this case, you have to find the number of years, which would, how many days that is. And I'll give you the number of days. But just to do it. Where? Oh, there it is. So I want March of what? Whoops, 2009. 2023, March, what was it? What was it? I can't see. Wow. Whew. Okay. That's 1,192 days. 1,192 days. So that would then be 238.56 over 208.47 to the 1 over 1,192 divided by 365 minus 1. That would be the number of years right here. This guy right here is the number of years. And I will give you the number of days if I ask a question like this. So in that regard, what I do is I would take, open parenthesis, 238.56 well, with open parenthesis, divided by 208.47, close the parenthesis, and then raise that. Where's my exponent? Okay. And then to the open parenthesis, 1 divided by, open parenthesis again, 1137, was it? 1190, what? 1192. Be careful with parentheses. Actually, I should do this on the TI for you. 365, close the parenthesis, minus 1. 4.21% return. Annualize. Let me do that on the TI-83. I'll do the same. I'm just doing the same thing on a calculator you will be using. Okay? Okay. I'm going to take the 238.56, open parenthesis, 238.56, close the parenthesis, divided by, well, no, I don't want to close the parenthesis, divided by 208.47, close the parenthesis, raised to the open parenthesis, 1 divided by, now we're going to trap that denominator with another parenthesis, 1192 divided by 365, close the parenthesis, now we finish the closing, minus 1, 4.21. Just get it down so that you can hammer through this. And I'm going to tell you something right now. This is like a lot of finance problems. If you make a mistake, your answer is going to just look ridiculous. Trust me on that. If the number looks like it's like a typical percentage, you're probably, you're more than likely you've gotten it right. But if it like looks like in the hundreds or thousands or tiny decimals of zero, decimals of a number, then you probably did something wrong. It should land in a normal range of a percentage if you do it right. And if you do it wrong, it'll look ridiculous. The same is true with the other ones. I'm going to have you price a bond, and I'm going to have you find the yield to maturity on a bond. If you key something in wrong, it's going to look really wrong. So, for example, if I have a... NTL 4.5% 2032 bond. First thing is, if I quote the bond, quote, if I give you the quote at 103.48. Find the yield to maturity. And alternatively, I'll go take it the other way. I'll give you the yield to maturity, and let's say that the yield to maturity is 4.8%. Find the quote. I'll do it both ways. I will ask you this. I'll do it both ways. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. I'll do the second one first, where I have the yield to maturity. Now, this bond has a term of 13 years. 13 times 2 coupons a year. Make sure you do semi-annual payments, because I will give you the answer if you one of your multiple choice answers will be if you forget to do that. I know, right?
Now, the yield to maturity is 4.8. That's divided into two periods a year. Now, in this case, I am finding I've got the yield to maturity. I did that. Now, the price value, in this case, I want to find the quote, so I leave that part alone. Now, the payments on this are the coupon, 0.045, times the face value, which is always 1,000, and they're divided into two a year. Now, the face value of the bond is $1,000 always. For heaven's sakes, make sure you see the end value there. You have it on end. Now, you go back up to price values, the quote, alpha solve. It's a 971.24. As a quote, that's 97.12. Make sure you see whether I'm asking for a price or a quote. Yeah.
Did you get the
4.8 divided by 2. It's the yield. I percent is yield. I percent is yield. Always. Now, taking it the other way, in this case, I'm going to need to find the I percent. I'm asking for the yield to maturity. I've been given the quote on the bond. Make sure that you put it as a negative and you put it in as a price, which would be 1034.8. And the payment will be the same. So all I have to do is go back up to I percent and say alpha solve. For God's sake, multiply it by 2 because you put in the payments and the term as half years, so you're getting out a half year's interest. So you're going to have to take that back through and you're going to say that number times 2. 4.15% is the yield to maturity. Which makes sense because this bond is selling at a premium to par. So the yield must be below what the coupon is. The coupon's way too high, so the bond buyers are going to buy this thing and drive its price up because it's giving a fancy coupon. Last pieces of this, I'll have you calculate a net present value and an internal rate of return. All I can tell you about it is easy as pi, 3.14159. Just put it in. You put in your discount rate first, like, for example, 5.3%. You put in your initial investment. Let's say it's $100,000. Or let's say $10,000. And then comma. Make sure you are using the braces. Open a brace to give the positive cash flow. Let's say it's $2,000. Then in year 2, it's $3,000. In year 3, it's $3,000. And then in year 4, we have the end of the project, which is $2,000 with $500 of salvage value. And then you close your braces and you close your parentheses. What did I put in wrong? Oh, look at what I did. I put in a parenthesis there instead of a brace. So I go back second entry. Exactly what I was warning. And it's really hard to see on a calculator. Close the brace. There we go. So it's a negative net present value project, so we reject it. And if I wanted to find the internal rate of return of this project, all I have to do is second entry to pull the formula back up and then go up there and say replace that with the internal rate of return function, apps finance IRR, and then we got to get rid of that interest rate because you don't use an interest rate. It's telling you an interest rate, the IRR is.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Did
I make a mistake there? Let me go back here just for a second. Did I key in something? Yeah, that's what I get for... Where's the period? Oh, there it is. Wow. It's a good thing you say, because I just can't see today. I mean, I might as well just get I got to get a dog. He's got to do math. I mean, that's kind of complicated, 1.92. Let me go back and do that NPV again. Apps. Anyway, so the NPV, this is going to be a positive NPV project, so you would accept it. I wonder where I would get the dog, though. Let's try this. Oh, one other thing, just to give you another heads up here. I was going to tell you one more. Have your ratio sheet with you. However, I'm not going to directly have you do a ratio. Not calculate one, but you have to know what they, how they are put together. So in other words, it's more, do you understand what these things are telling us? Now, did you have any questions? Yeah. Well, it could be almost any one, but the level threes would be more likely the math questions. Yeah, go.
Would there be a number of questions?
I don't think so. Let me see real quick. No. I put up the test on ReggieNet last night, and I'll put up the answers to that, the answer key, probably tomorrow, at some point tomorrow. For the exam one, yeah. Don't leave because you have an evaluation to do. Okay, go ahead. What is it? It can be anything. I'm not going to tell you that. No, that's a little too specific. But I would pay attention to agency. Now, you got an email today that gave you the link. Here is that link in case you didn't do it, in case you didn't see that. Now, you go in and you, okay, you're, and someone go in there before you leave, before you, I leave, I have to leave when you're doing this. Someone go in there to make sure that works, because last semester the password didn't work and I'd already almost left the whole place. Now, has anyone gone in yet and gotten there?
Yeah.
You're in? Okay, good. That's all I wanted to make sure. I have to leave. Now, as always, I thank you for your time this semester. And again, if I haven't said it before, the Illinois State University audience is the greatest audience in the world. Good night, everybody. Ah, shut up.